99,000 tonnes of beef, 180 tonnes of poultry, and a nation of farmers saying, not on our watch. Yes, it's the big trade deal that has rural Ireland up in arms. It's News Talk Daily, I'm Shane Beattie. This weekend, all eyes are on the long-running saga of that European trade deal with South America. Tomorrow, after years of delay, EU ambassadors are expected to back the EU-Mercosur agreement, which covers Brazil, Argentina, Uruguay and Paraguay. Irish farmers have repeatedly warned that the deal could threaten domestic beef and poultry markets, and they've been loud in their dire warnings about poor quality beef and chicken flooding our supermarkets. Now they're planning a major protest in Athlone on Saturday to put pressure on the government, which officially opposed the agreement. So today on the podcast, we're going to hear two perspectives. First, we'll learn about those concerns from the farming sector. Then later, we'll get the perspective of Irish business, which strongly favours the controversial free trade deal. And yes, along the way, I'll be asking whether greater competition might mean lower prices for hard-pressed shoppers like you and me. With me now is Stella Meehan, and Stella is the editor of Agriland, and you're very welcome to News Talk Daily. Stella, I suppose first of all to say, I feel like I've been mentioning this deal for years.
It's true. It's been going on now for nearly a quarter of a century, Shane, to be honest with you. The Mercosur-EU deal, it's not just a trade deal, it's an agreement around political cooperation also, as well as the economic side of things. And it's with four primary South American countries involved. And then, of course, you have 27 EU member states and changing leadership on an ongoing basis over the years. So it's taken about 25 years for this agreement to get to this point. And that's because there were deadlocks over the years and talks were suspended, for example, in 2004. And then they were suspended for a number of years there at the time. There were changes in governments, which revitalized the desire for more lucrative trading arrangements, I suppose. And then there was a lot of back and forth, you know, between 2010 and 2020. So it's by no means a small body of work. If the deal does go through, it'll be the biggest trade deal the EU has ever negotiated. So with the Mercosur trading bloc, when it was set up in the 1990s, since then it has grown its export market, I suppose, exponentially. And if the EU deal with Mercosur is ratified, then they will create the world's largest free trade zone. So that's a market of about 700 million consumers. So maybe it kind of gives you a context as to why this has taken so long, Shane.
Sure. And you might remind us just why are Irish farmers so opposed to this trade deal?
So I suppose the biggest sector for exports from the EU to Mercosur countries is primarily machinery, appliances, and of course, particularly cars. However, on the other end of that, the biggest sector for export from Mercosur into the EU in agricultural products. So basically, there's going to be some reticence there and concern amongst the sector within the EU about the potential impact on the EU domestic market for agricultural products. Now, that's not to say that we here in Europe don't export any agri products to Mercosur countries. We already do, like we export wines and spirits, chocolate, olive oil, and things like cheese and milk powder. But the trade deal would allow for 99,000 tonnes of carcass meat beef into the EU with a 7.5% duty or a tariff. Now, 55% of the quota will consist of fresh or chilled meat. And then the other 45% will be the more lower value frozen meat style products. So what people might not be aware of is that the overall volume is 1.5% of total European beef production and is less than half of the current imports from Mercosur, which are at about 206,000 tonne, give or take. So under the Mercosur agreement, the EU would allow a quota of 180,000 tonnes of poultry as well to be imported duty free. And this volume would be phased in over 5 years. So, sorry, Shane, back to your original question, why are Irish farmers fearful? As you can imagine, the EU and the UK are significant markets for Irish beef. And farmers here are concerned that if cheaper beef starts coming into the EU market and is appearing more and more on shop shelves at a cheaper price than Irish produced beef, then consumers will start veering more towards the South American beef, and Irish beef production, ergo Irish beef farm enterprises, will suffer as a result. So that's basically their concern.
Now, the farmers' lobby has always been very, very strong. I'm just wondering, have farmers sort of hijacked this entire trade deal and made it all about one sector?
As I mentioned earlier, it's because this particular sector is the one that would be most impacted in terms of the imports coming in, because it will be mostly predominantly agricultural produce coming from the Mercosur countries. So they are the industry that's most affected by it. If it were another industry, for example, if it was cars coming in, you can certainly imagine that the motor industry, particularly in Germany, would be very, very strong in their lobby against this particular deal. But as I said, it's because it's primarily going to be agricultural produce coming from South America countries that the farmers in Europe are concerned. Not all European countries, as it must be said, it's predominantly France leading the way with Ireland and the likes of Poland and Hungary. But they have really, really lobbied hard to have this deal either vetoed or changed from its current format to try and include some of their concerns or offset some of their concerns with maybe certain clauses or safeguards, as they are called.
Now, the deal came very close to being ratified just before Christmas. Wasn't it the case Ursula von der Leyen was nearly on a plane to Brazil and had to cancel the flight last minute? So what happened that this deal was stopped at the last minute just before Christmas?
Yeah, so European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen had planned to go to South America and formally sign the deal before Christmas on the basis that she assumed she had a majority of EU member states backing her and the deal, giving her the mandate to do so. However, at the 11th hour, as we all know, Italian Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni publicly raised its opposition to signing the deal in its current form and therefore said Italy would not support the signing of it in December. Now, this move by Italy was important because it gave those in opposition to the trade deal enough of a qualifying voting minority in the EU to block it and cause all sorts of delays. So just to be clear for the listeners, this power only exists if four or more member states rally together with 35% or more of the total EU voting population. So the countries who have expressed opposition and concern from the very start are France, which has 15%, Ireland, which only has 1%, Poland and Hungary also, they have low percentages. So without Italy's 13%, they wouldn't have been able to delay the deal further. But as Italy had that leverage just before Christmas, Ursula had no choice but to stall the deal until she has the necessary support. Now, the Mercosur countries are not best pleased at this further delay. And the Brazilian president, Lula da Silva, said before Christmas, if the deal isn't signed, they would pull out of any further attempts for a deal. But he seemed to roll back on that, as he did eventually agree to give it another month to satisfy the concerns which Italy had. So gave it until this month, January.
Right. OK, now we also saw a huge protest in Brussels. I think it was the biggest ever organised action by European farmers. Big protests in Brussels and now big protests in Athlone.
Yeah, on Saturday, Shane, thousands of farmers from across the country are expected to descend on the central point of Athlone. They chose Athlone just to make it accessible for everyone in the country. And they're going to demonstrate their opposition to the trade deal and highlight their concerns about their livelihoods should the deal be signed. It was initially organised by independent Ireland MEP Kieran Mullooly and TD Michael Fitzmaurice, but they have now stressed that it's not a party political protest and that any politician from any party, independent or otherwise, or farm representative is welcome to come along to participate and invited to speak. So there'll be like a big cavalcade, a convoy, it'll have tractors, jeeps, vans, cars, whatever. There'll be people even walking and they'll all descend on the Monksland area of Athlone. But before they head off, they'll travel then in convoy to the Technical University campus. So there'll be further speeches there. So just a bit of advice actually to listeners, the group is trying to minimise the disruption to the public as much as possible, which you can imagine yourselves, if you had planned to be in that area of Athlone on Saturday for shopping or other reasons, you might want to avoid it just maybe until later in the day.
Right. OK, now back to the deal itself and there is some urgency to get this sorted in January, if at all possible. If Italy changes its position on the deal, then the deal will go through in the next few weeks, will it?
More or less. Not to be too defeatist about it, Jane, but at the end of the day, it is a game of numbers. And I was in Brussels myself and talking to many different vested interests over the last few weeks about it. And it is quite a lot of politicking. And essentially, it's majority rule. That's the way the EU trading bloc works. That's the way the EU vote works. So if you don't have the numbers to oppose something, it will go ahead. At the moment, there is that qualifying minority voting numbers there, with Italy also opposed to it. Hence the reason the leverage was there to block Ursula signing it at Christmas. But Italy, which we are gathering from sources in Brussels and in Italy and in Rome themselves, are more inclined to go and forward with signing it. That would mean then that what's left is France, Ireland, maybe the Netherlands, Hungary, Poland, and that's not enough to block the deal. So it would look likely that if Italy decides to get on board with this deal, then Ursula von der Leyen and the Commission has that qualifying majority in the vote to go ahead and sign the trade deal.
Okay, finally, Stella, just to ask you, I'm not a farmer myself, but I'm noticing when I buy my mince every week that the price of it has shot up in recent years. Is there not some benefit to me as an Irish consumer having this competition in the meat sector?
Well, it depends on what way you look at it. I suppose you are correct. If there is more competition in the sector, then it is good for the consumer. But what about the farmer? So, you know, if farmers in Ireland, I mean, agriculture is an enormous sector of the Irish economy. And if farmers in Ireland cannot make a sustainable living in this country, in a country that's predominantly rural and agricultural, then there is concerns for the wider economy and the wider rural economy here. So farmers need to be able to produce something where they can make a profit, even a small margin. It doesn't have to be much for farmers. And if you know, consumers shift towards that, while it might be better, there may be more money in the pockets of consumers, the overall economy will suffer, because farmers, a big part of our economy, are not making a sustainable living, and therefore they're not going, you know, some farm enterprises will not be viable. They will, you know, they might go to the floor, and then there will be less spending in rural areas, meaning the economy is going to be affected by it. So in the short term, it might be beneficial for the consumer like yourself and myself, who want to go in and get our mincemeat at a valued price. Ultimately, holistically, for the economy, it's probably not great to have that much of an impact on one of our primary sectors.
Stella, editor of AgriLand, Stella Meehan, thank you very much for joining us on News Talk Daily. Let's hear a different perspective now. Ian Talbot is chief executive of Chambers Ireland, the country's largest business network. Ian, you're very welcome to News Talk Daily.
And good morning to you.
Ian, we've been hearing about the opposition from farmers, obviously. Why is Chambers Ireland so strongly in favour then of the EU-Mercosur deal?
Well, we're looking at Ireland as having benefited so much from free open trade that we think Mercosur is an ideal opportunity to open up a brand new market of 250 million people. And the particular issue seems to be around the beef industry in particular. There are great opportunities in this potential deal for other parts of the agri-food sector, for example. So there are great opportunities, and I think the debate has been driven far too much by just the simple focus on beef industry.
But obviously farming very important to us here in Ireland, and when we hear the agriculture sector warning it could seriously damage beef and poultry producers, do you not take those words of warning seriously?
We take this very seriously, and we've been very clear in our press releases over the last few years, as it is this stage, that protections need to be put in place. But the ultimate figures here really aren't that big. The beef benefit here that can come in at a reduced tariff rate, reduced from about 15% to 7.5%. And 99,000 sounds like a lot, but in fact, when you divide it across the European population, it's 1 8-ounce steak per person per annum. This isn't a big amount. And with the safeguards that have been built in to the agreement and additional announcements, even yesterday, Ursula von der Leyen promising a further investment in the common agricultural policy renewal, we really think that the farming community concerns are being addressed in this. And there's just so much opportunity in other areas that we need to have some focus on them as well.
Let's look at those other areas then. Are there concrete examples of why companies who export the things they make want this deal?
Well, absolutely. There's great opportunities in pharma, medical devices, ICT, digital services. But going back to the agri-foods area, there's great opportunities in dairy, processed food. The spirits industry could benefit. And we'd point to the Canadian agreement that was put in place back in 2019 as a good example. A lot of the same concerns were put forward when this new agreement with Canada was being proposed. But since CETA has come into play, there's been some incredible boosts in exports from this country. Cheese exports have increased from 16 million in 2016 to 80 million in 2024. Whiskey's gone from 13 million to 26 million. So these are some domestic indigenous industries, for example, that have done extremely well out of the CETA agreement. And there's no reason to believe the same won't happen with Mercosur.
Okay, so we'll talk here, we'll say machinery, pharmaceuticals, drinks, food processing, firms hit by recent US tariffs. Would they do well out of this?
It's an alternative market. I think it's very important as well to look at the alternatives here. This is giving us strategic diversification. It's helping us with what we've been doing since, I suppose, Brexit, looking to diversify more from the UK market. The US market, obviously, there's continued concerns that there may be, who knows, new tariffs coming in there. This just gives exporting companies more opportunities and potentially more opportunities as well. Let's not forget about importing companies with the ability to import from new areas and potentially source product at a cheaper rate than they have been able to as well.
Nonetheless, farmers very, very worried, farmer organisations very worried. They're going to be out protesting this weekend. They would say that the deal is hypocritical, that it enforces high environmental standards on people here while allowing imports to be produced under looser rules abroad. So what would your response be to that?
Well, the European Union has very, very strong controls. We recognise that Europe does impose probably the highest standards in the world. So nobody we're looking to do business with produces anything to the same standards as we do in Europe. But let's look at some of the other places we're looking to do deals with. For example, Commissioner Sefcovic, I think, is working on a trade deal with India at the moment. Again, you know, standards there won't be as high, but it's another market of over 1 billion people if we can do business in that area. So this is an issue that, yes, European import controls need to be enforced, and that's an issue for member states to look after themselves at their borders to make sure that those are enforced. But we are the best in the world, so it's inevitable that anyone else we look at isn't going to have the same standards, and we are going to have to make sure that people adhere to our standards. And again, the CETA agreement would point positively to the fact that exporters from Canada just don't bother trying to export stuff that doesn't meet European standards into Europe. They're not going to waste their potential shipping charges and everything else to send stuff over if it doesn't make it past the border. So they're self-regulating, not sending stuff over that doesn't meet the standards.
But we have seen the quality of some Chinese goods that have made it through the European Union into Ireland, and they will be substandard. So some people may not trust the safeguards and standards.
Yes, and I think, again, that is an issue that the European Union are looking at closely, and they're looking at things like the de minimis regulations around postal services, for example, where you can bring stuff in without customs checks and tariffs under a certain level. Now, that's going to be potentially inconvenient for people who are used to getting, you know, the envelope in the post with something that they've bought over the internet that's actually ended up coming from China that they didn't realise. But this is the reality, and that's nothing to do with Mercosur.
Yeah. We saw before Christmas a vote was delayed. Ursula von der Leyen was nearly on the plane to Brazil, and then the vote was delayed. If it's delayed again, and there's no indication that it would be, but is this a danger to the Irish economy? Is this damaging to the Irish economy if we keep seeing delays in finalising the deal?
The total impact on the Irish economy won't be huge. So this deal in particular won't make or break the Irish economy. But what it does say, it'll be just a worrying concern for us as a free open trading country if the European Union can't do trade deals with some of these big economies. And in particular, if you look at the Mercosur countries now, they're under increasing pressure from the US. They're under increasing interest in doing business with China. And if it's too difficult to do business with Europe, they will look elsewhere. They will go elsewhere. And that 250 million people market with an increasing middle class and increasing disposable income and so on will go to what now look like serious competitor countries that we might have thought were friends this time last year.
Okay, just to ask you finally, we have politicians lining up, we have MEPs lining up to come on the radio, to come on podcasts and express skepticism about this deal. What's your message to the politicians?
Well, we've already put out our message to politicians that Ireland has succeeded enormously as a free open trading economy. We can't pick and choose. We have to go along with what the European Union generally is moving forward on. And there's huge benefits in that. It's opening up markets that Ireland on its own would never be able to penetrate. So there's huge advantages on this. Let's make sure that the protections and safeguards that we need to put in place in the farming industry are delivered and are adhered to. And let's move forward with this.
Ian, thank you very much for your time today. Now, we'll be keeping a close eye on tomorrow's EU vote and Saturday's big protest in Athlone. You'll also get the latest updates on News Talk and at newstalk.com. That's it, though, for this edition of News Talk Daily. From me, Shane Beattie. Bye-bye.